Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 74, Mastering Strategy with Rich Horwath, Elevating Leadership, Harnessing Strategic Thinking and Planning for Executive Success with the author of Strategic. What this episode will do for you is help you discover Rich's path from marketing to becoming a leading expert in strategic thinking, including the pivotal moments that shaped his career. Learn the fundamental components of strategic thinking and how to develop these critical skills for effective leadership. Understand the difference between proactive and reactive leadership and why focusing on strategic planning over firefighting is crucial for long-term success. Gain insights into Rich's GHOST framework, goals, objectives, strategies, and tactics for creating and implementing effective strategic plans. Explore the importance of curiosity in leadership and how adapting an explorer's mindset can drive innovation and continuous improvement. And avoid the status quo trap by recognizing common patterns that hinder strategic thinking, such as complacency and lack of detailed planning, and learn how to overcome them. But before we dive more deeply into this episode, in case you're new here, consider that I created the Thought Leadership Studio podcast to help listeners improve their thought leadership skills. So whether or not you consider yourself a thought leader at this point, consider that I've come to the conclusion that the practice of strategic thought leadership is now fundamental to effective marketing and helpful in any area of positive influence. It's about leading an audience to embrace a unique perspective that gives them more value. So this podcast is designed to provide an accelerated training process. And an important part of this is having models of excellence, for which I provide interviews of people who excel in one or more areas relevant to strategic thought leadership. And if you're listening on an app, make sure you visit the episode page on thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description for a summary of the episode with a curated transcript, a story and images, and additional resources and offers. In this episode, I'm thrilled to introduce Rich Horwath. Rich is the founder and CEO of the Strategic Thinking Institute and a leading authority in strategic thinking. With experience as a chief strategy officer and a professor of strategy, he brings a blend of practical insight and academic rigor to his work with leadership teams. Rich's journey into strategic leadership began when he realized the need for resources to help individual managers develop strategic thinking skills. This led him to create the Strategic Thinking Institute, where he enhances executive capabilities through workshops, coaching, and speaking engagements. In our discussion, Rich emphasizes the importance of curiosity and an explorer's mindset in leadership. He shares insights on setting clear goals and creating detailed plans using his GHOST framework, goals, objectives, strategies, and tactics. He also discusses time management, peak performance, and the connection between personal and corporate strategy. Rich is the best-selling author of 8 books, including Strategy, The Skill to Set Direction, Create Advantage, and Achieve Executive Excellence. His work has been featured in major publications, and he offers free resources on his website, strategyskills.com. Join us as Rich shares his strategies for thought leadership, focusing on prioritization, differentiation, and having a clear destination. His expertise promises to provide actionable insights to elevate your strategic thinking and drive your business success. So without further ado, we'll jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host, Chris McNeil of Thought Leadership Studio, and I'm sitting here across Zoom with Rich Horwath, who's the founder and CEO of the Strategic Thinking Institute, where he enhances leadership team strategic capabilities through workshops, executive coaching, and keynote speaking. His mission is to help executives think, plan, and act strategically to achieve their goals. He's a best-selling author of 8 books, featured in publications like Fast Company, Forbes, and Harvard Business Review, and recognized by Chief Executive Magazine as the world's foremost expert on strategic thinking. That's incredibly impressive. Welcome, Rich.
Chris, great to be with you today. Thanks for having me.
So maybe to help our listeners who may not already be familiar with you and your work, have some context for where you're coming from. Was there a pivotal moment in your life that led you on this path of teaching and leading in strategy?
Yes, and I remember it vividly, even though it was, I'm going to date myself, it was a long time ago, it was about 25 years ago. I was working for a marketing firm, and I was writing strategic plans for companies. And we were doing the typical strategic planning offsite session where, you know, you get together for a couple days offsite, you talk about the strategy, you try to come up with a plan. And I remember we had a break midway through the day, and I was talking with one of the managers, and he said, you know, Rich, I had my performance review, and my boss said, I'm too tactical. I need to be more strategic. And he said, how do you do that? You know, Chris, this is about 25 years ago. So most of the books on strategy at that time were really on corporate strategy, books by Michael Porter, C.K. Prahalad, really helping a corporation develop strategy. But at the time, there wasn't really a roadmap for the individual manager or leader to go from tactical to strategic. So that was really my light bulb moment to say, hey, here's an opportunity to dig in, do some more research, and try to put some things together, some practical ways for people to be strategic day in and day out. And so that really launched my company 22 years ago until today.
Wow. So you were in marketing and you saw the need for teaching, migrating from a tactical to a strategic mindset.
Yeah, exactly, Chris. And as you know, with your expertise in strategic thought leadership and marketing, you know, from a positioning standpoint, the thing that always fascinated me with marketing is you've got to be able to understand not only what are you good at and what are your capabilities and competencies, but you really need to understand the landscape that you're in. So you need to understand the competition. What are they able to do? What are they good at? You need to understand your customers. Where is their value? Where is there not value for them? And then you need to put all those moving puzzle pieces together. And so that really fascinated me, is how do we do that on a regular basis? And then how do we take that from a marketing standpoint? And then how do we align that with the strategies from our other teams, sales, finance, operations, IT. So that's when I started putting those dots together to say, hey, if we can develop not only marketing strategy, but strategy across the organization, that could even be a powerful way to get everyone aligned.
That brings up a couple of potential threads that are really interesting to me. One of them I'm getting, and correct me if I'm off, is curiosity.
Yes. Great point there. I love the word curiosity you brought up, because what I see sometimes is leaders who feel that they have to have control over everything. They have to have the control over the meeting they're in, the script that's being presented, if they're presenting to other people or board of directors. But then there's the few leaders that are comfortable and curious, to your point, and are okay with going into situations saying, I'm going to have an explorer's mindset here. I'm going to really look to learn, to come up with new ideas, new insights in this conversation, in this meeting, whatever it might be. So I like that word curious you use, because I do believe that the best leaders have that explorer's mindset where they're always looking to generate, to create new insights, new learnings to help them bring more value to their team and to the people that they serve.
I love that explorer's mindset term. That's, to me, that speaks to and gives me an image of not getting caught in the expert trap.
Yes.
So to speak. Because when you're the expert, then, hey, I know this. I don't need to continue to question my own beliefs or investigate the environment for changes. But when you're the explorer, you know, you might be an expert explorer, but that might be an expert at staying curious in new situations. So you take in new information.
That's a great distinction, too, that you bring up. You know, are we, you know, to your point, if we're just experts in our content, at some point, the content is going to need to evolve. And the way that content evolves is it evolves through listening, questioning, being curious, and understanding what's next. You know, too often, I think, Chris, we as leaders, we're thinking about today and we're focused on our to-do list. Mm-hmm. And what I've found is that the best leaders are also dedicating time in their calendar to the future state of the business. Yes. So where do I want to be a year, 3 years from now, and spending time today thinking about that and then positioning themselves to do that type of role?
That's another theme I caught initially that intrigued me, the perspective, I would call it, of being able to zoom out and see yes. both over a broader period of time. Maybe time horizon is a characteristic of strategic thinkers, and space, take in more information from the environment and where you operate from, your customers' thinking, your competitors' thinking, but to be able to take in that information, you know, and I think just we as humans, we have this tendency to get set in our beliefs.
Yes.
And forget to question them. Yeah, especially in when things change, but leading change is a big part of strategy, isn't it?
Absolutely, because when we set strategy, what we're really asking people to do is we're asking them to change the way that they behave, the way they position themselves. And so when we ask people to change, that becomes uncomfortable. And to your point, people like the status quo. We don't like to change. But again, if we look at companies in the past like BlackBerry, Blockbuster Video, Circuit City, you know, very, very good at what they did for many years, but then they got complacent. They gravitated to the status quo. They didn't push themselves out of their comfort zones, and they really stopped listening to and asking questions about what's the next piece of value that we can deliver to our customers. And that's why, you know, they fell from the peak of their industry to the very bottom of the industry. So I think it's a great lesson for all of us leaders out there. You know, we have to stay curious, we have to ask questions, and we have to build that listening mindset so that we're always recording what's happening. So we're almost taking a continual mental radar of our situation. What's happening in the market, with our customers, the competition within our company. And so we've got all of those things that we're trying to stay abreast of, but then take those insights and really channel them into how am I going to allocate my resources strategically so that I can bring greater value to the customers that we serve.
That makes perfect sense, especially in the context of what we talk about on this podcast of being strategic with your thought leadership, not just being seen as an expert, but having a positive impact on the thinking of an audience, which means, you know, curiosity is a big part of it. But so is being able to be innovative and not just be a parrot of what you've discovered through your curiosity, but to have a vision for something new that doesn't exist already. And bring that to life, which is getting out of our comfort zones. And I'm sure there's some listeners currently thinking, I'm sure you listener aren't thinking this, but there may be others. Am I stuck in a comfort zone? Do I need to step back and take a broader look? What kinds of questions would you recommend the listener ask themselves to start to analyze their situation for this?
You know, one thing, Chris, that could be interesting for people is to think about what their business model is. And what I mean by that, and a business model really is three things. It's how you create value, how you deliver value, and then how you capture value. And so I think if you step back to your point and ask yourself, How am I creating, how am myself or my team creating value today? And based on what I'm hearing and seeing in the market, how might we need to evolve that value down the road? If other people are starting to copy what we're doing, doing things in a similar way, we might need to create different value that's going to be even more well received. And then the second question is, how are we delivering value? You know, are we doing it, you know, from a thought leadership standpoint, we could say, you know, are we doing it through through articles? Are we doing it through speaking engagements? Are we doing it through white papers? Are we doing it through conferences? How are we delivering that today? And how might we do it? How might we evolve that delivery of value in a year or 2 years to do, again, something even more unique or more fitted to our role? And then finally, the last question is, how are we capturing value? To your point, Chris, it's one thing to be an expert, but it's a whole nother thing to be able to take that expertise, package it, and communicate it to other people in a way that's valuable to them, not to us. So we need to take our ego and move it aside a little bit and think about how do we build other people's egos up by creating valuable information they can use that we use from our expertise. So I think those three questions around creating value, delivering value, capturing value can be a nice place to start to challenge that status quo.
So you've done a lot of work with a lot of organizations, I imagine, and you've built this platform around your writing as well. I'm sure you've seen a lot of situations that you might start to see patterns and typical obstacles to thinking more strategically. What would be some typical patterns that might be useful to the listener to look for in themselves and those they work with and those they lead?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the first one would be that firefighting or fire drill mentality. We have to ask ourselves, are we being proactive or reactive? There's a lot of adrenaline associated with solving fire drills and answering fire drills. But the reality is most of the time, those are urgent, but not necessarily important and not necessarily tied to the thought leadership or the strategy that we're trying to pursue. And so I see a lot of people spending time, even if it's an hour or two here and there, on things that are not directly driving the value that they can produce. And if we spend even an hour or two a week, that's 50 to 100 hours a year, potentially, that we're wasting because we're not being intentional and we're being reactive like a bumper car at a carnival instead of being really proactive and focused on where we want to be. So I would say that's probably the first one is, you know, if you notice yourself being reactive, if there's lots of fire drills, you know, every week that you're having to put fires out, that's probably the biggest one. And then, you know, a second pattern would just be what I call kind of the New Year's resolution, where we set up a goal, you know, at the beginning of the year might be lose 20 pounds. But the reason 80% of New Year's resolutions fail is because there's not a detailed plan that people execute to reach that New Year's resolution. And I see that in business a lot too. The goal is to be number one in the market or to be the premier provider or to be the expert in communication or emotional intelligence. But there's not really a good, thoughtful, detailed plan to reach that goal. So I would say that's the other pattern is, you know, do you see yourself putting goals out there, but 3 months or 6 months later, finding yourself in the exact same place because you didn't build a detailed plan to get there?
What are the components of such a plan that would be especially effective?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer that we want to keep planning fairly simple. And so if we go back in time, when you think about strategy and plans, really we're trying to answer two questions. Number one, what are we trying to achieve? And number two, how are we going to achieve it? And those sound like very rudimentary questions, but it's amazing, Chris. I look at probably 300 to 400 plans a year from marketing, sales, account management, finance. And it's amazing how often those two simple questions, what are we trying to achieve and how are we going to do it, aren't really clearly answered in the 50 or 60 PowerPoint slide deck that we're looking at. So that would be something for folks to think about. And the way I approach that is with the GOST framework, which it stands for goals, objectives, strategies, tactics. I tend to use those from a planning perspective because those are the four oldest planning terms dating back about 2,500 years. And so goals and objectives really answer the what question. What are we trying to achieve? The goal is general, maybe get to the top of the mountain. The objective is specific. We want to climb 12,000 feet in 4 days. And then strategy and tactics answer the how question. So how are we going to get there? So in this case, the strategy is, can we go straight up? Do we need to zigzag? Do we need to go other, around the other side of the mountain? Our general approach to getting there. And then the tactics are really the specific tangible things that will help us achieve our goal. So in this case, it might be ropes, pickaxes. Maybe we need a boat to go around the other side of the mountain, those tangible things. So I think if folks keep that GHOST framework in mind, goals, objectives, answer what we're trying to achieve, strategy and tactics, how we're going to do that.
And obviously there's a delayed gratification component. And I wonder how much of the firefighting mentality versus the delayed gratification mentality is just the ego-based thing of I'm being effective because I'm working really hard to fight this fire while I'm subconsciously setting up the next fire so that can continue.
Exactly.
Where it seems relatively boring when we're, hey, everything's humming, everything's effective. We don't really have any emergencies to solve this week. We can just relax into our success a little bit.
Right, right. Yes, I think that's a great point. We don't want to confuse activity with achievement. And again, that's why we've got to really define what does success look like for us. And then we need to put milestones to it. Because to your point, Chris, oftentimes it may take 12 months, 18 months, 24 months to get to where we're going. And in the meantime, like you said, that can be, you know, it can be somewhat frustrating because we might not see the progress. But what I found is really good listeners, good leaders create milestones so that, you know, on a monthly basis, they're saying, okay, here's a couple of wins that we had on our path to our destination that's 2 years away. So I think you're right. You know, we need to not necessarily get addicted to the adrenaline of the fire drill, but really understand what's the long-term win that we're looking at.
Absolutely. I really respect what you do. And it's like, you're really close to the core of what the mission of this podcast is about. Making positive change, leading people's thinking somewhere more helpful.
Yes.
And you've walked the talk. How many books have you written now?
So 8 books, yep. And again, just trying to share with people practical tools, practical ways. You know, this last book, Strategic, was really designed around how do you help people navigate all of the areas of their business, strategy, leadership, organization, communication. But even the book before this was a graphic novel. So think superhero comic book meets strategy textbook. So Strategy Man versus the Anti-Strategy Squad. So, you know, that's one thing from a thought leadership because, you know, we need to continually challenge ourselves. You know, even if we consider ourselves an expert in a domain, what I would challenge people to do is, how do you take your expertise and tie it to other domains, to other areas as well? I took the idea of strategy and then the idea of comic books and graphic novels because they're visual and younger people like visual and said, how do I bring those two areas of expertise together? So even if we're an expert in one area, there's always ways to build expertise to other domains so that we can expand our thought leadership even further than it is today.
Absolutely. And isn't a big part of innovation, cross-mapping different previously unrelated fields or concepts, bringing them together. It just opens up our thinking about things, you know? Do you enjoy opening people's thinkings, both as a change agent, as an author?
Yes. You know, I think the one thing I've seen is the best leaders and thought leaders are continually under the premise that new growth is going to come from new thinking. If we're exposed to the same ideas, the same people, the same books, the same magazines, we're not going to branch out and grow the way that we potentially could. So, you know, I think all of us need to continually ask ourselves, where are new sources of thinking for us? People that we can talk to, what's the diversity of thoughts that are coming to us? And then how do we package those and channel those in a way that's going to bring value to other people? So I think, it's, you know, as a thought leader, we're always wanting to bring value to others, but we've got to feed ourselves first from a thought perspective, and we need to do that in different different arenas.
So for a literal example of that process, I'll put out a common syndrome I've run into in my work with people and helping them develop their thinking and export it to an audience. Most people in business realize they're more visible than ever before now through the internet, and people in a relationship with people, and then secondarily the companies.
Yes.
First the people and the people's ideas. But there's still this mindset maybe left over from older advertising models that we just do content to make sales. But really the sales are higher when they're emergent from creating content to serve and to lead and to get that audience effect by adding so much value by making it as empowering as possible. But I've seen so many leaders miss the audience effect because they have this belief that every piece of content has to sell, then people don't see the empowerment that's in there that could lead them to continuing to want to read the content, develop a relationship through it, and do business with a person later. How would you address that from your perspective?
Yeah, so I'm a big believer that we always have to serve and share value first. And what I found is, over the years, over the two decades I've been doing this, is that when I try to serve everyone, I dilute the value to the people that really would benefit from it. So I think part of it, Chris, is really understanding who is the tribe, who are the people that have similar values, similar principles, similar beliefs, and then really taking what's authentic to us and then serving that up to them, listening to them, understanding what's resonating with you, what's not resonating, and then continuing to sharpen that saw. You know, to your point, if we just continually dole out thought leadership and we're not honing it, we're not shaping it, we're not polishing it, then I think, to your point, we sometimes risk not necessarily bringing the full value that we could bring. So I'm a big believer that we shouldn't try to be all things to all people. We need to find out whose authenticity blends with our authenticity and then really provide them things that are extraordinary value so that it really separates us from the crowd.
So defining your potential audience more by more narrowly defined psychographics, to use a jargony term.
Sure.
But it says what it is, you know? So what drives you? What, you've been very prolific as a writer. You're obviously very successful as a leader in strategic thinking in general. And what makes your day a great day?
Yeah, well, first of all, talking with people like you, Chris, I really enjoy talking with people who are experts in their field and getting an idea of how they think, you know, what's important to them, what are the questions they're asking, what are the thoughts and ideas they're sharing with me. So to me, that's really stimulating. And then just, you know, I really love sitting down with leaders and helping them determine where are we today, where do we want to go, and how are we going to get there? What are the different options for us to get there? And so within those three questions, where are we today? Where are we going? How are we going to get there? There's lots of interesting avenues, interesting paths that we can take from a conversation perspective to talk about maybe a new competitor's product in the market, or one of our customers just merged with another customer. We're going to lose that business. Or here's a trend we're seeing with, you know, generative AI. How is that going to impact what we're doing? So I love talking with leaders about, you know, what's happening around them and then what do they do about that? Because a good leader needs to filter out a lot of the noise, a lot of the things that aren't relevant to their business and to the value and the thought leadership they provide, and really think about what is still germane. So those are the things that get me excited. You know, I've always been a fan of competition, not in the sense of win or lose, but of the Latin origin competere, which means to strive together. So to me, I always enjoy kind of the thinking together with other people, because I think it brings all of us to a new plateau.
I love that. And I bet all kinds of things emerge from these conversations. And so where are we at? Where we're going? What's the environment? And I guess people can be in a leadership position, but really may not have full clarity on the answers to those questions without the facilitation that you bring. Well, and I know consultants listen to this podcast. I've spoken with a number of them. And I know we're all in these situations where we need to create an environment to be a change agent within an organization. So kind of stepping back from the path of strategy, I'm getting some emerging themes of like focus being a really good one, and perspective being a really good one. But stepping back as a consultant in general, what do you do in your work to create an environment where change can happen in the organization that you're working with? What steps do you take? What do you look for?
Yeah, you know, the first place I like to start is with an assessment. And what I mean by that is, you know, if let's say, Chris, that we went hiking next week and we both twisted our ankle and we went to the doctor's office and that, you know, that we're waiting for the doctor. She finally comes in, but she doesn't ask us any questions. She doesn't take any tests. She just writes a prescription, hands it to us and leaves. We would think that's crazy because in medicine, we know that a doctor has to diagnose before they prescribe. But in business, what I see people doing all the time is they're prescribing a new activity, a new project, a new initiative without first really diagnosing what's happening around them. So I think that's a key piece is, are you able as a leader to really diagnose what's happening around you and do that on a regular basis? I think that's a key piece of being a great leader. And really a key piece of understanding what's going to be important from a thought leadership perspective to the people that we serve.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. So how do you write books? How do you manage your time to produce all these books in really a relatively short time to have written 8 books, at least in my model of having various partially finished books laying all over the place. So I could learn from you. You brought them to fruition successfully. How do you manage your time and how do you manage the process?
Yeah, so the first thing I like to do when I start any project is create a mind map. And I'm sure a lot of folks out there are familiar with mind maps where you put a topic in the center of the map and then you make branches like a tree, branches from that topic. And then those branches become subtopics and then other subtopics. So it almost looks like a giant tree where you've got the topic in the middle. So let's say it's thought leadership, and then you've got branches off of that. So, you know, you might have digital marketing as one branch off of that. You might have public relations as another. You might have speaking as another. And so I use mind maps like that just to start the thinking process, and I'll just keep it on my desk. And then every day I'll look at it and say, you know, I read this article. Here's a good idea I should add to the mind map. And so it starts to build like that. Then what I find is typically there's one or two challenges that emerge. And so from thought leadership perspective, it might be, how do I monetize expertise? That could be one of the challenges. Sure. And so then what I'll do is typically some research. So I'll do a survey, interview people, qualitative, quantitative, and I'll come up with some research to say, you know, 22% of people are able to successfully monetize their thought leadership. Well, that leaves 78% that haven't done it. So there's a lot of room there to get better. So then now how do we solve that challenge? So then we come up with a framework or an idea, a concept to solve that with some practical principles and tools that people can use. So that's really my thinking approach. And then from a time management standpoint, I usually try to carve out my mornings. I block my morning. So typically up around 5:15, start the day with some meditation, some mindfulness, and then really get into my creative work. And then I'll usually work out mid morning to get the energy going and the blood flowing, and then spend another hour or two on the creative piece. And then once noon comes, have a little something to eat. And then the afternoon typically is interactive. So meetings, webinars, things like that, where I'm interacting with other people. So I find that, at least for me, blocking off chunks of time to write, to think is a more effective way than trying to do a half hour here and a half hour there.
That seems really a lot more effective to make an appointment with yourself that way, so to speak.
Great way to put it.
I like how you start your day with the mindfulness or meditation and the physical exercise, recharge the spirit, mind, and body. Yes. Feel like that gives you a jump start on the day and sets a positive frame for everything after that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. I think, you know, especially people who are experts and who are thought leaders, the folks out there listening, you know, sometimes we can get so wound up into trying to create more momentum and more thought leadership and more expertise that, to your point, we lose sight of the holistic element of mind, body, spirit relationship. So sure. It is important to make sure that we're auditing that and investing time in that, in those other elements each day as well.
Absolutely. Well, I was in a fitness business a long time before into marketing and then thought leadership. So I totally respect to the fact that if you're going to achieve big goals, you need to be the person and in the kind of condition to achieve those goals. Who will achieve those goals if not a peak performance version of yourself?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, very well put.
Yeah. And the mind and body are both in spirit, and it all ties into that, you know? So I like that tuning effect. And how do you see the relationship between individual peak performance and corporate strategy?
Well, I look at it this way. I look at it, you talked about being in that realm. I think of the fitness realm. I think about strategy and individual performance both from a fitness perspective. You know, you talked about it. If we're going to be fit, you know, if we're going to be physically fit, we can't just work out one day a year. That's not going to do it. And from a corporate strategy standpoint, I find it's the same thing. In the new book, Strategic, I talk about how do you develop strategic fitness? Well, if you do strategy once a year for 2 days at your offsite meeting, you're not going to be strategic. So we need to take the approach of really professional athletes. You know, they spend 90% of their time on fitness and practice and 10% competing. But in business, it's really flip-flop. Most people spend all of their time on working in the business and no time on building fitness in the other parts of their life. So I think, again, if we're going to be fit individually as a peak performer or as a strategist, we've got to build fitness in all areas of our life. And so, again, I think peak performance demands strategy, meaning we can't be all things to all people as a person, as an individual performer. If we say yes to every request that comes in, then we're probably going to be wasting time, wasting energy. And so I'm a big believer in not only time management, but energy management. So to be a peak performer, we really have to determine from even as we tie it to corporate strategy, what are the most important places for myself, my team, to put our resources, our time, our energy, our attention to be successful. And then we have to filter out all of the other stuff that's coming to us because we can't do everything.
So would it be fair to say that you take a systemic, holistic view of performance where you step back and look at everything that's involved, realize that you can't do everything, obviously you got to focus, but within the context of the person, the organization, the performance of the organization, the person's health, it all is an interlocking system. And you have to step back and look at that and make sure no part's bleeding away energy from the other part, because any part can influence the whole.
Yes, I love the way you put that, because I'm a big fan myself of mapping our ecosystem. You know, what does our ecosystem look like? And so the ecosystem can be comprised of the people that we interact with, the organizations that we interact with. It could be competitors, it could be customers, it could be suppliers, it could be different activities that are involved. So I like to create giant circles to represent those, and then start drawing dashed lines, dotted lines, solid lines to indicate levels of relationship. And then to your point, sometimes what I'll do is I'll color code those, and some of them will be red, meaning I'm not investing enough time in this part of the ecosystem, in my ecosystem. Some are green, that means I have a good amount of resources invested there. Some are yellow, meaning probably should put more time there. And then some are purple, meaning maybe we're spending too much time there and we can offload some of the time in that part of the ecosystem to other places. So I like to do that on one page. I think that's a fascinating exercise. And I think that tool can be applied to really anything. To your point, it can be, if I'm an individual thought leader, you know, I can map my thought leadership ecosystem, or I can map it to my company strategy. So if I'm a thought leader within a company, what's my company's ecosystem look like? What does mine, and where are those connections at?
Looks like systems thinking from here.
Yes, you were right on the money. And I know you're a, I know you're a prolific fan of that as well. So I'm a strong believer that we have to understand the system in which we operate before we can make enhancements.
Absolutely. If we don't, then we can end up pushing and pushing and pushing and working so hard and wondering why nothing's moving when there's a door right over there.
Right.
We have to step back and just look a little wider, open up our perspective.
Exactly. And,
so to the listener, I'm going to link to Rich's page on Amazon. If I usually link to each individual book, but you have so many, it would like take up half the podcast page, actually. That's one of those that we've talked about and his other resources. But usually we wrap this up by asking a couple of questions. And one of them is, what would be the top three things you would recommend that our listener do to further their success in general, but in thought leadership, using what you know specifically, that only you could really tell them? And second, someone's listening to this and is thinking either I need to get Rich's book or I'd like to contact Rich about working with an organization. How would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, so to address the three things, I would say the first one is, and these will all be strategic focus. So great strategy demands trade-offs. You cannot be all things to all people. So pick no more than three priorities and allocate 80% of your time to those three priorities. If you're dispersing your time over more than that three priorities, it's going to be too diffuse. So that would be number one. The second one would be around great strategy. It's differentiated. It's unique. So we often in the United States get caught up in, are we better? Are we better? Are we better? But it's not about better, because better is subjective. It's about how are you different in ways that people value. So really understand what's your unique differentiation that people value. And that I think is a key piece. And then the third one is really around what's your destination. I think too often people are activity oriented and not destination oriented. So it's not just about being on the activity treadmill each day. It's about where do you really want to go in a year, 2 years, 5 years, and then creating the path to get there. So trade-offs, differentiation, and destination, I think, are three things that are important. And then if you like, I've got lots of free resources, articles, white papers on my website, strategyskills.com. So strategyskills.com, lots of free resources there.
Fantastic. And actually, I just downloaded a PDF, the Be Strategic Manifesto.
Oh, there you go. Beautiful.
This looks great. Great, great fonts used in there too. Typography,
oh, thank you.
I guess you call it. Really nicely laid out. Like, new growth comes from new thinking. Think, plan, act. Most people do not do none of these. They simply react. That's the truth. Well, this has been a pleasure, Rich. I appreciate you, and this has been very motivating, and I'm sure the listeners found it very valuable as well.
Well, Chris, thank you. I really appreciated thoughtful questions, and it was wonderful to chat with you.
My pleasure.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. This has been episode 74 with Rich Horwath. And what an inspirational interview, where we talked about things like moving from tactical to strategic in his light bulb moment, the explorer's mindset, staying curious in strategy, challenging the status quo, creating, delivering, and capturing value, and overcoming strategic obstacles by identifying common patterns in order to best overcome them. So thanks again for listening. And if you are listening on an app, make sure you click the link in the episode description. It will take you to the episode on thoughtleadershipstudio.com, where we've got a curated transcript and summary, and also free resources like The Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, to help you with the building blocks of your own thought leadership. as well as links to Rich's rich set of resources, including his books and his website, where you can get some free PDFs and other resources. So thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm Chris McNeil, your host, and look forward to seeing you on the next episode.
Thought Leadership Studio.